Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Graham, welcome to a classic big interview. This time, we go back to season 16-17. This is what I had to say about it back then.
The excellence of John Collins' ability and his career was perfectly emblemised by his pretty dramatic move from Celtic to Monaco in 1996, where he'd play alongside a couple of relatively promising youngsters named Thierry Henry and David Trezeguet, whatever happened to them. I went down to Monte Carlo and La Turbie, the training ground, to interview John 20 years ago and saw what I thought were many remarkable things of the Monaco sporting culture. In this big interview, John explains, for example, why it was that those two young French internationalists were asked to carry the kit hamper into the dressing room at most away games during that season just before they won the World Cup so dramatically with their country. During his own time in French football, John underwent something of a technical and tactical revolution and found that that was well within his capability, well within his locker. John still has strong opinions, with which I fully agree, about the development of young footballers. Here we talk about Jean Tigana, sweeper keepers and their use, their meaning in the modern game. This is a player who was ahead of his time in many ways during his own career, and sadly, because the game has slipped backwards, I think he's still very far ahead of the thinking of most people in modern football, certainly in modern football development. He shouldn't be out of the game. His views should be listened to and applied. And if anybody's got any sense, they'll employ him very soon. How much I enjoyed talking to John Collins for the big interview.
I think it's well established that beyond a super athlete and a good footballer, you're a generous man. And the proof of that is this is the 20th anniversary of the first time you tolerated an interview by me, which was in different, less beautiful surroundings, warmer surroundings. Take us back, if you will, to La Turbie, which is where I think I met you for the first time, and it's a place that impressed me a lot. So before we tell the bigger story of John Collins, the Monaco player, La Turbie, describe where we met and what that meant to you in your working life.
Well, La Turbie is Monaco's training base, up in the mountains behind Monaco, actually in France. It's cut out of a mountain. Beautiful views, backdrop of the Mediterranean, the most beautiful drive up to a training ground probably in the world.
In the world, yeah.
I came from Barrowfield, and any Scottish person will tell you Barrowfield's not the prettiest drive in the world from Celtic Park to Barrowfield, but it was a wonderful training complex, and for me it was a night and day moving from Scotland to Monaco. So it was a great location, but more important than anything, what goes on top of those pitches is the most important, the work that gets done in the training pitch.
Can I take you to something that I saw, like, and I am obsessed by little details, but when we were obviously a wee bit nervous, or at least wanting to put on our best show, chatting to you, not make a pig's breakfast of it, and we're watching, we're allowed to watch training. That's the first thing as a journalist, you go, this is inner sanctum, because in Britain we believe that journalists should be brilliant at writing about football without ever seeing how it happens.
Yeah.
Which is just daft. So we get to watch training and it's stunning, but at the end, I don't know why we were taken into the dressing rooms, maybe just to register with you, where every single player, none of whom knew us, stopped as they're changing or showering or whatever. But as we walked past, every single player, bonjour, say good morning, handshake to these strange foreigners, show of respect. I'd never seen anything. Is that part of that club's culture at the time, or?
Well, exactly the same thought that I had the first day I walked in. Everybody coming up to me, shaking their hand, bonjour, welcome. And it's something that happens every single day. You go down to the academy in the stadium, we've got all the academy kids. Nobody knows me. Every single one of them walks up, first thing they do is say bonjour. And I think it was something that really surprised me when I came back, and I came back to Everton, and it wasn't part of the daily routine. Some players would just take their coats off, hang up, hardly say a word. But I really appreciated it, made you feel welcome and part of them. And it wasn't just shaking a hand for the sake of it. They look you in the eye, and it comes with a smile. So was it part of Monaco's culture or the French culture? I don't know, but certainly at the football club, it was something that, to this day, I was there 3 weeks ago watching the training. I was over with the family, and it, same thing. Players come up, say bonjour, welcome.
What was the motivation? Let's leave all talk about contracts or Bosman's aside. When you've got that option to go to Monaco, and my memory is at the time that you have plenty of options, Nice not being one of them, what's the motivation to say, I'll choose this?
Well, I was coming at the end of my contract at Celtic. I signed 2 3-year deals. I've seen the first one out, signed a new 3-year deal, and in the final year of my contract, I made the decision that it was time for a new challenge. I was 28 years of age, and I'd been in Scotland playing first team football since I was 17, and I was going to make a move. So when my agent phoned me and says Monaco want to fly over and talk, I thought, wow, that sounds exciting. One, French football was a good standard.
True.
Technical. Ball played on the grass, which is the way I like to play it. Monaco, obviously a beautiful place and a beautiful climate. It appealed to me. I've got to be honest, I didn't know too much about Monaco and the players. Actually, I didn't know any of them. But I knew they were always pushing for the league, top 3-4 clubs in France. And when I went over to talk to them, I liked what I had. Mr. Tagana had to say to me, the first thing I asked the coach, the most important thing at that stage of my career, I wanted to play central midfield. I didn't want to play wide. So before we talked money or contracts or anything, the talk with John Tagana was, where are you going to play me in the team? He pulled out his matchbox, pulled out 10 matches, put his shape of his team up, and says, that's where you're going to be playing, in that central zone. Loves young, quick player on the wing outside you, who'll suit you, play passes. And that young player turned out to be a great young player, went on to have an amazing career, which was Thierry Henry. So the first thing was, I wanted to go there, but I wanted to play in a position which I felt I enjoyed most, and that was central midfield. So
that was a demand to have more influence in the play, was it?
Yeah, to be, when you play central midfield, you can control the game, you can get it off the back four, and then you feed. When you play wider, you've got to wait on players feeding you, so there can be large periods of the game, long periods in the game, when you don't get a touch of the ball, but you're still making the runs and working hard. And it's an important role in the team, the wide player, don't get me wrong, it's vital. But I just felt at that stage of my career, I wanted to play that central role so I could be involved in the match, in the thick of the action.
One of the things we've learned with the feedback to this is that, sadly, not everybody's of my generation, and you're younger than me, but you'd have been of an age to understand who Tagana was when you were talking to him. And for those who haven't maybe seen him play, he genuinely, not only was he a great, he was part of one of the great European midfields in that France side that wins the European Championship. And they were genuinely sensational, weren't they?
Yeah, it was Platini, Giresse. I mean, top quality. And they're sort of the idols. At the time, they were French idols. When I went across, wherever we went, away from home, it wasn't the players that the supporters were talking or looking for autographs. It was still Jean Tagana. So he was a great player. He played in the midfield zone. So I certainly had a relation with him. When it came to talking tactics and what he wanted from me.
Was he a teacher?
It wasn't a great, it wasn't a, how can I put it politely, he knew what he wanted from his players. He told me he wanted everybody to pass and move and receive the ball and work hard, but he wasn't a coach that worked hours on end on tactics and moving the team about. But I think his biggest asset was selecting players. Not that he signed me, but he signed good players, and he liked giving young players a chance. Which I think was a big thing for him, certainly at Monaco, because we had obviously a budget to buy players, and they often did buy players. But when I was there the first year, he integrated 2 young players into the first team, Trezeguet and Henry, which takes a bit of doing for a manager to do. But needless to say, those young players did a great job for the team and him. But he was a quiet manager, wasn't a manager that was shouting and bawling and too animated on the pitch. But he gave very simple messages. Boy, this to play, go and play. And he had a good group of players.
It was a sensational group. And I remember going in this interview that you gave me. Remember at the time, like Kenny Dalglish at Newcastle going very well. And you'd drawn them. It was the break in the European trophy, which was the UEFA Cup. And you knew that in March it was Newcastle. And then in England, because there are a lot of people who maybe don't have a wide vision, well, that's an easy draw. Newcastle through. I remember you saying to me, see that kid over there with a long sort of Rastafarian hair? He said that he'll take Newcastle apart. He'll absolutely. People haven't heard about Thierry Henry, but he's. You said, I mean, I think at the time he was 19.
Yeah.
And he'd only had, you know, about 15, 20 starts, tops. And you marked my card and said, this guy's just going to be exceptional.
Yeah, he had lightning pace. He was so athletic. Never had a great left foot, something he had to work on, and he did. Worked every, and he's finishing every day after training. But our forward line was terrific. In front of me, we had a little number 10 called Ali Bernabeu. Fantastic
sensational
player.
Sensational football.
Sensational.
Did he come
10.
To City in the end? He came
to City, end of his career.
Yeah.
Played for Paris and Bordeaux after Monaco as well. And we had a striker the first season, Sonny Anderson, who was a terrific Brazilian. We sold him for fortunes to Barcelona. It didn't do so well at Barcelona, I don't know why, but he came back to Lyon and won title after title in the terrific Lyon team. But he had blistering pace and skill as well. So
little Victor?
Victor on the right-hand side, Ekpeba, the Nigerian winger. So we had lots of talent.
When Thierry Henry comes into the team, is he playing wide or off the stretch?
No, he played wide. He played outside left. He played that wide of me. Which,
cutting
in on his right foot and bending things in the top corner of the faraway post. But his biggest asset as a young player was his just, one, he was powerful. Two, blistering pace. And he was raw. Sometimes he held onto the ball too much. But his pace just frightened to death to defenders. And he was very humble, well-mannered, and a hard worker. Came through the academy system, Clairefontaine, well-educated, worked hard, didn't have too big an ego. He was calm, always listened to the senior players. And what a wonderful story I tell. The year we won the title, the rules were an old kit man. He was a 70-year-old, Petit Louis he was called. Too old to be a kit man and carrying hampers, but he folded the jerseys. And the rules were, the youngest in the squad carried the hampers off every bus, every plane, wherever we went. And the season they went on to become World Cup winners with France, they carried the hampers on and off the bus without one moan. And
is
always
Trezeguet and Henry.
Yeah, and when I think back, I think, well, credit to them, but it was the rules in the club. Young boys do the lifting and the carrying, and keeps their feet on the ground. And remember where they came from.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is something that we talk about a lot because, you know, I've lived in Spain for 15 years now, but we've talked to Chrissy Ward a little bit. Training ground culture in Britain, and Martin on the train here was talking about, in the majority of the big continental countries, the way in which it's expected that players maybe have breakfast at training, maybe stay for lunch, that their diets are controlled, but that they either do a little bit of extra work or maybe some gym work, but it's not, which I think the predominant British culture has been, in getting about 15 minutes before training, get stripped, do an hour and a half, get out of there. In the bad old days, maybe to the bookies of the snooker hall or for a bevy. But also this concept over my lifespan has been, if you're a footballer, you get in, you do your training, it's important, and then the rest of the day is yours. Whereas I don't think that in the leading continental, that wouldn't have been your experience.
No, not at all. I think the biggest difference when I went to Monaco was Celtic was hard training, pre-season was tough. My first week, we went to a training camp up in the mountains, and I'll never forget it. I was sharing with a young player. He came into the room. We had dinner, arrived at about 7 o'clock, went down for dinner, came up to the room. About 9 o'clock, he went out of the room and came back up with his training kit. And I was like, well, what have you got your training kit for? And he says, oh, you have to go and get it tonight because we start 7:30 in the morning. We go, before breakfast, we go for a jog in the woods. That's the first session. And I thought he was joking. I thought, serious? 7:30 start, yeah, right. Up at 7 o'clock.
Shine on.
So sure enough, it was true. I had to go down and get my kit. First morning, 7:30 session, up to your room, shower, breakfast, back, 10:30 start, technical session with the ball, working hard till midday, lunch, into your room, siesta, back out for a third session, technical again, 5 o'clock. And for a 10-day training camp, it was training 3 sessions one day, 2 sessions the next, 3, 2, 3, 2. And in between that, eating well, sleeping well. So after 10 days, it was like, wow, it was equivalent to what I would normally get as 3 weeks training back home, because the players come, train in the morning, go home. So the amount of work we got done in that training camp was incredible. And also at the same time, for me being a new player, it was wonderful. I spent a lot of time with new teammates, getting to know them. They were getting to know me, and I was working on my French at that time. But it's the same in academies over there. They put a lot of hours on the training pitch. It's not just one session a day, I think. I may be wrong, but most Scottish teams will play on Saturday. They'll have Sunday off. They'll train Monday, Tuesday. They'll have Wednesday off. They'll train Thursday morning, a little bit on Friday. So for me, the younger players that from the age of 18 to 21 are still developing their game and their technique, they need more sessions, more afternoon sessions to work on their technique. But there's certainly improvements in the way Scotland and Scottish teams are training in the hours, but I think there's still a long way from the
French.
It's
a philosophical change that's needed, isn't it? I think it's just we have to approach it different mentally.
Well, it's a job. It's a full-time job. It's not you just don't go in and do an hour and a half session and think, I've done my work, that's me finished. You've got to ask yourself, what else do I need to do? What other work could I do? And it doesn't have to be physical. It might mean I'm going out in the afternoon, I'm going to just work on my right foot, doing passing. Just pinging it 20, 30 yards from my left footer. I see a lot of players that are so one-footed. And one thing that when I'm watching Scottish football, he's a left-sided centre-half, he's 20, he's poor his right foot. I'm like, well, how long has he been at the club? Oh, since he was 10. And I'm like, well, how can he have a poor right foot if he's been in the club system since he was 10 years of age? For me, when that happens, it means there's a flaw in the system. If you've got a player in your system for 10 years, he can't be 20 years of age and have a poor right foot. You've got to work right foot, left foot. And I think maybe that's what the continental clubs, they break it down in France and they do more individual work on the players. And I think that's, we can learn more from that and spend more time on the training pitch.
Take aside your talent and set it just to one side for a minute. I'd imagine the more demanding that the atmosphere was on a daily basis in France, probably the more that helped you. I mean, you're somebody who, grit and determination and self-betterment are just pretty much embedded in your character.
Well, training is always something. I've always loved training. I've always loved pushing myself. From a very young age, it was encouraged from my father. I had a big brother, huge role played in my development as a football player. Why? Because I played with my big brother's friends all through my childhood. From 7 years of age up until about 14, I was playing with big guys. I was never the star in the training pitch or in the streets. because they were all bigger and stronger than me. So I've always been pushed. And when I went to Monaco again, I was pushed to another level on the training pitch.
So with the big brother, that's pushed to, you want to, you're not left behind, you don't want to be knocked over, you want to show I'm one of the big boys.
Well, one thing, it's competitive, but when you play with bigger kids, you can't run past them because you're no faster than them. You can't bump your way around them because you're no stronger than them. Mm. So you have to think and use your skill and develop your football brain. So I have to 1-2 it past them. I have to play it right and run past them on the left. Or I have to go forward and then jink backwards, change direction, use my strengths, which is I'm smaller, I'm more nimble. So people talk about street football, small-sided games. That's where you develop your brain and your touch because you're getting thousands of touches and you're making thousands of decisions under pressure, often against bigger players. And it's something that's gone now. Street football won't come back in as it was in the past.
No.
But I've said it before, many people have heard me, we've got to try and replicate that in the academies. And that doesn't mean, and that means moving players up levels, age levels. So
testing them, taking them out of their comfort zone.
Taking them out of their comfort zone, so they're not a big number nine under 13 scoring 50 goals because he's bigger, stronger. Because he's not developing. And I'll say, as soon as you go 3 goals up, as a youth player, you're not developing as a player because it's too easy. The opposition is, there's too much space and it's too easy. So you've got to try and develop your academy teams that they're all playing up. So if you, for example, you're Celtic or Rangers, you don't want to be winning 5-0, 3-0, 6-0. So can you have the under-12s, a lot of the good ones, playing up an age? And for me, that's what street football did to the good football players. They were stretched, playing is bigger, stronger, thinking, making their brain work on that training pitch and getting thousands of touches of the ball. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I think when I break it down, that's what we've got to try and get back to within our academies.
I was up in Aberdeen recently and I was really, really proud that the Dennis Law Legacy Trust has persuaded the Cruyff Foundation to have Scotland's first Cruyff Court in Aberdeen. They did that by reminding Cruyff and the people that worked for him that the only Scottish Ballon d'Or winner came from Aberdeen. So what we get is this court where these things are going to be available to kids who don't have facilities. It's free, it's open, it's, there are 200 all over the world. And it, reading back on what Johan used to say, it's just amazing. You've replicated everything that Cruyff said about life. I was playing the cobblestones in Amsterdam and there was a car parked there, there was a curb. I was like, right, can I use the curb for a 1-2? And in a Cruyff, the last interview I did with Cruyff, which was last year, about a year ago now, and Thomas Tuchel, the Dortmund manager, stood up and said, I'm Dortmund manager because I was successful at youth level and I got through the ranks and I got picked up and I was a Harrod and I fought for the youngsters and they must have the best of everything, the best travel, the best kit, they must be treated like... He said, now we've bred people who don't have solutions, who are automatons and maybe are quite well put together, but only if things are linear. He said, I'd go back now and I'd change everything. I'd make the coach slow, the bus slow, I'd break the from the air conditioning in there, I'd make them wash their own strips. And has he got a point that because street football will never come back in the way we've been talking about, we have to find ways to make these players think about how to resolve problems, how to use things as assets that seem to be barriers.
Yeah, I think use time. I think sometimes, I think players, and sometimes coaches, sports science have got a lot to do with it. They sometimes say, oh, you're training too much, and rest. And I think a lot of the time, I agree with sports science a lot of the time, but when it comes to young boys, I think they should be spending more time with the ball in the afternoons, trained in the morning, they've had their lunch, have a nice rest, back if we've got an indoor gym, or go and play 3v3s, go and get set up little small areas, 4v4s, and people talk about, I go and see big games, 11v11 kids, 12, 13 year olds, some kids hardly getting a kick. What you get in 4v4s is triangles everywhere. You get decisions made constantly, defensive decisions. Where do you go? Moving right, moving left, moving forward, moving backwards. And when you have the ball at your feet, exactly the same. I'm looking right, I'm looking left, and people are coming towards you. Football, some people say it's a simple game, but it's a game that's learned. people are coming towards you all the time, people are going away from you at different times, there's a ball involved, so the brain's working
constantly.
A
lot of decisions to make.
A lot of decisions, a lot of distances to be read, and the more they have of small, high-tempo games at a young age, the more their brain and their touch is developing. And that's where we've fallen behind European countries in Scotland, because technically we're not where we should be, and tactically because we're not technically where we should be, our tactics have evolved to such an extent we're not playing technical, skillful, gifted football from the back through the goalkeeper, because people are saying, oh, they're getting caught in the ball because they've no technique, so let's just kick up the park. So basically when you say that, you're giving up, you're saying, well, we're not playing football anymore, we're playing a different sport, we're playing a game that's half rugby, half football. So it's got to be a radical change. And people say, oh, players don't grow on trees. Players are developed. Developed by a system and by coaches, doing the right things on a daily basis. And the reason we're not developing and getting to World Cups and European Champions is it's no bad luck. It's nothing to do with luck. It's all to do with the system's broken and has to be fixed. And people say, what? That's a bit harsh for me to say that, but it's, trust me, people are scared to say it.
Please God there are more people. So please God there are people listening to you now and more people saying the same things.
I love football, and I love seeing young players doing the right things on a training pitch. And when I'll go and watch youth games and I see the keeper kicking up the pitch, flicking it on, somebody flicking it on, scoring a goal, and everybody cheering, thinking, yes, I'm thinking, that's nothing to cheer about. Eight players haven't touched the ball. Eight players haven't been involved in that move. Eight players haven't developing their skills. And I sound like a broken record when I watch Barcelona, Pep's team. It's total football. Everybody comes in after the last 5, 6 years, 10 years, we watch Barcelona. Did you see Barcelona last night? Ah, it was brilliant. And I'm like, right, so let's copy it. Let's copy it in every training pitch, every field. Let's try and do what they do. Ah, but they've got good players. I'm saying, like, we've got to develop football players, and that's the way to development. It starts at the goalkeeper, and the big debate in England just now is Pep changing the goalkeeper, and a lot of people in England just don't get it. They're just not getting it. Pep doesn't want a goalkeeper. He wants a goalkeeper and an outfield player. That's where it all starts. He's behind those back four. He's making angles, constantly moving, so they've got another outfield player. Once he gets it right, and it'll take time, it's going to blow them all away. Because so many players, pundits, journalists, they aren't getting it in England.
It's appalling.
They are not getting it.
They don't understand, do they?
It's unbelievable. They don't realise. And there's two things. A goalkeeper being good technically, that means he can ping a nice ball, good at passing, but he's been able to do that under pressure. And for Pep's goalkeepers is sucking a centre forward as close to him as possible, taking him out of the zone where he wants to go in, and he passes it right, and then it goes in that zone where the centre forwards come out.
So you've got one fewer player that's pressing, the lines have begun to be broken, everybody else around that's been in a perfect formation has got to make decisions.
And I hear it week in, week out, the Sky Sports.
What's difficult?
I hear it saying, oh, he's taking a risk, what is he doing playing there? They don't get it. They don't get it, what Pep's trying to create with Man City. That's where his success started in Barcelona. Everything starts with a goalkeeper.
Let me ask you then, in that case, because as well as I can speak this way because it's our podcast, but as well as your brilliant eye and the ability to articulate it, which too few people in football can do, you played with one of those. You played with Van der Sar, who's of that model.
Yes, and
archetypical of that model, and I think a brilliant footballer.
And that's why he came through the Ajax Academy, educated by Johan Cruyff. He's a footballer. Van der Sar, I remember a phone call from Manchester United when Van der Sar was at Fulham with me. Hey, what do you think of Van der Sar? Could he play at Man United? I went like, he is made for a big club. How lucky we've been having him at Fulham. He's a great shot stopper. He's a fantastic with his feet. He's a talker, a leader, perfect.
But
again, you're not getting one player in that position. You're not getting a goalkeeper. You're getting a goalkeeper. You're getting a centre half. You're getting a sweeper in the one position. And that's why, again, Spain had it. Germans have got it now with Neuer. They're another level up, so they're a player ahead. English.
Simple arithmetic, isn't it?
And people
one more footballer.
I hear pundits and people on television saying, oh, his job is just to catch the ball and save. I just want my goalkeeper to make saves. You're like, well, hold on. He'll touch it 8 times with his feet to 2 with his hands, maybe even more. So what do you think he should be working on? His hands or his feet? 80% to 20%. No, he'll make 1 save in a game, but he'll start 50 moves. He'll start 50 moves.
I think as well, if you... Listen, this is just a proposition to you. If your keeper is all these things you're describing, then... Let's say it's not the time when he's going to play and draw people and put it across the box, which we were always told never ever do. Let's say it's just you've made him since the age of 10 until he's now 25 and in the Manchester United first team, or the Manchester City first team. You made him think like a footballer. It's not just, right, my job's done, I've caught this. Right, who wants it? It's like, in the instant, look at Neuer's. I think, was it the David Moyes United team when United score away there? And there's a brilliant little, they call it a vine on the internet, where United players are running away in celebration, and it looks like Neuer's running with them to celebrate it. But he's not, he's running to get the ball immediately, because he's like, we'll restart, we'll get going, and, you know, as soon as the kickoff goes, Bayern Munich score again. But the keeper, with the ball in hand, who's thinking like a footballer, will be distributing it in a way that will catch the other team out. During the course of a season, you'll get assists from goalkeepers.
Well, if it'd be interesting to find out how many Barcelona goals over the years and Bayern Munich have started with a goalkeeper. Talk about sometimes they get caught in the ball and they concede a goal and they go, oh, disaster, they've conceded a goal because they've been caught in the back. Count... Somebody should do some research. How many goals have been started with Neuer? A pass back, or a pass out, or a throw in with his hands. It'll be...
It's a net gain.
Big, big gain. But we've got to change this mindset in Britain. No, Scotland, this is a British thing.
Yes.
That the goalkeeper is now going to be an outfield player.
Let's take as well a debate that I don't know if you're tearing your hair out about, but without blowing John Stones up yet to be the finished article. But you can see that there's... elegance and his ability, that he's very confident in the ball and that he can become a footballer that can pass it and can break lines. If you're in a team where you want the sweeper to break that first line and then make a big pass, a good pass, he's going to get there, you'd think. But there seems to be exactly the same negativity or fear about seeing a footballer at the back, and they're almost as if people are gleeful, ex-players too, are gleefully on him all the time, on his back all the time. And I haven't understood. I'd like to see a more positive, optimistic reception.
It's a very British thing. I've seen the exact same thing as you. They're like, oh, Stones is taking risks, and it's a word we use in Britain, but we don't use it so much in France, and I know they don't use it in Spain and Barcelona. Risk, that's not a risk, that's called taking responsibility to use the ball and not to be scared when an opponent gets close to you. And every now and again you get caught and you can see the goal, but big deal if you're making, if you're starting or creating 20 goals, will you make passing that ball to fullback goes to the winger does his magic and it's a goal. But it all starts with goalkeeper centre half. So John Stones needs to do things quicker. I think he can get the ball and make it quicker, make quicker decisions. That's the next stage of his development. What I like, he wants to take the ball, he wants to take responsibility, and he doesn't panic. And I just hope he doesn't panic, because the English media are trying to transfer into his mind that negativity, get into Rose Ed, clear your lines. I've heard it all before. A lot of nonsense. Might work for average teams and average players, but teams that win the Champions League, Bayern Munich and your Barcelona, it's total football from the back, from the centre halves. And we had one, Rio Ferdinand was total football at Manchester United when he was at West Ham. He was a cultured, relaxed footballer. Virgil van Dijk got another one, total football player, carries the ball like a midfielder. He's calm, he's not happy just kicking it into Rose Ed. I hear it all clear. I hear it again in the media, get into Rose Ed, clear your lines. I'm like, that's not developing football players. You never hear that in France or in Spain.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.